Thank you for downloading the IA podcast. You can listen to all our episodes on Podbean, Spotify, Apple, and YouTube. Enjoy.
The Office for National Statistics revealed last month that there was 4,651 drug-related deaths in England and Wales last year alone, the highest tally since records began in 1993, and 3.8% higher than in 2019. The number of drug deaths have risen year on year for the past 8 years. So arguably, the war on drugs has failed, and traction is now growing for the legalisation of drugs such as cannabis. YouGov polling suggests that 52% of Britons say they would support the legalisation of cannabis in the UK, with only 32% opposed. With attitudes shifting, could the UK be braced for a change in drug policy starting with cannabis? With me to discuss this is Head of Lifestyle Economics at the Institute of Economic Affairs, Christopher Snowden, who has argued for drug legalisation throughout his time at the IEA. Christopher has authored lots of research on the issue of drugs, including a paper called Joint Venture in 2018, which concluded that if cannabis was legalised, tax revenues alone could exceed £1 billion per year. Chris argues the criminalisation of cannabis in the UK has failed, and now is the time to change UK drug policy for good. So welcome, Chris. Chris, could you explain why you believe that cannabis should be legalised?
Well, why shouldn't it be legalised, I think, is the question. That should be the default setting in any free society. I think that it's, as you say, the prohibition of it has failed insofar as lots of people take it. More people use it than did when it was banned in the first place, getting on 100 years ago. And so I don't think that the drug is anywhere near dangerous enough or addictive enough or has enough negative externalities associated with it to justify its prohibition. On the contrary, I think that the prohibition of cannabis has made it more dangerous, and that the associated impacts of criminality and so on have increased the negative externalities quite unnecessarily.
One of the main justifications for the legalization of drugs is John Stuart Mill's harm principle. The idea, people are free to do whatever they wish as long as it doesn't infringe on the liberty of another person. Does the harm principle, work for all drugs? Can we accept a situation in which we allow drugs that are extremely harmful to the user and to those around them to be legal for consumption on the basis of free will and autonomy?
Well, yes, I think you can. I think Mill would say the same. I mean, he more or less did say the same in On Liberty, because he did discuss the temperance lobby, the prohibitionists. He had nothing but contempt for the anti-alcohol campaigners of his own day. And he also touched on opium. Interesting enough, he didn't really say anything about tobacco, because it wasn't really a big issue and there wasn't an anti-smoking movement. But there was a society set up to suppress the trade in opium in the mid 19th century. That, interestingly enough, was because China had banned opium. These campaigners felt it was quite wrong for the British government, the British Empire, to be pumping opium into the country, which is understandable. They weren't actually opposed to people consuming opium per se. They weren't opposed to people using opium in Britain. And in fact, opium use wasn't really considered to be any kind of a problem in Britain at the time. You had panics about gin and alcohol in general, but never about opium, even though opium was quite widely used. I mean, in fact, very widely used. Probably pretty much every adult in Victorian society would have used opium at some point, not to say there were opium eaters or opium addicts, but it was very freely available up to 1868 with the Pharmacy Act. And even after then, it was still very easy to get hold of. And yet there was no real problems associated with recreational opium use in the 19th century, nor indeed were the problems associated with recreational cannabis use at the point at which it was banned. All our drug problems have got worse since prohibition, without exception.
I suppose one argument is that, we can't make rational decisions if we are addicted to a drug. and therefore it's quite hard to say, you know, I have free will to say take a cigarette, because arguably I'm addicted to that, to nicotine. And what do you say to people who use those arguments?
Well, they've got a point. They've absolutely got a point. It makes it very difficult. When you're dealing with addiction, you know, whatever addiction means, it's, you know, rarely been very well defined. And even something like nicotine is not obvious that it fulfills every criteria of addiction. For example, people don't generally keep taking more and more of it over a period of time. But anyway, I mean, be that as it may, I think people have a rough idea what addiction means in practice. And it absolutely does reduce one's free will. And as free market liberals, we want people to be making free and informed choices. So I think one can accept that one's freedom is somewhat curtailed by addiction. The question is, what do you do about that? Seems to me that people's freedom is even more curtailed if the product in question is banned and you can be arrested for taking it. So, you know, the paternalist would just say ban it, and we're not actually bothered about people's freedom. They might use the argument that people aren't making a free choice when they're trying to get it banned, but it's clearly not freedom that they're particularly interested in. Otherwise, they wouldn't be demanding the criminalization of the product, which I would say is a greater impingement on freedom. But you're quite right that there's no obvious and easy solution to that issue. You can warn people about the potential dangers. You can help people who are addicted and want to stop taking the drug. And most importantly, I think you reduce the harms associated with the drug. So addiction in itself is not actually harmful. The reason people worry about addiction is it's often associated with harmful products. I mean, I'm addicted to nicotine, for example, but by vaping and using nicotine pouches, I found a way that to quite happily be addicted to it and enjoy it and have extremely minimal health risks. Even if that weren't the case, and I'm still smoking cigarettes, it's up to me to decide what kind of risk I'm prepared to tolerate. So addiction per se is not an issue. It's a question of what you're addicted to. I mean, a lot of people would say that social media is addictive, but I wouldn't say it's necessarily harmful, although you could, you know, in extremis, find scenarios in which it would be. It's about harm reduction, really. People have to be informed about what they're taking, and they have to be offered the drug in a safer or the safest form. And we're not doing that with prohibition. We're doing the exact opposite with prohibition, because all the incentives in the black market are towards making the product effectively stronger. I mean, what people are interested in if they're selling something illicitly is getting as much of it over the borders as possible. And so in the case of alcohol prohibition in America, that meant there was a massive switch away from beer and towards hard liquor, and not just hard liquor, but extremely strong hard liquor, you know, whiskey that was kind of 60-70% proof. And that wasn't because the market demanded that. It was because under prohibition, it's a seller's market. It's not a buyer's market. People would have preferred beer, but it was way too bulky. It wasn't as profitable for the people selling it. And so instead you had very strong moonshine, and that was more dangerous, clearly. And there were probably tens of thousands of people blinded permanently by moonshine. Many thousands died as a result of moonshine. And when prohibition ended, people swung straight back to beer. And there are very clear parallels between that instance and the rise, for example, of crack cocaine. I mean, coca, the drug in South America, is chewed, just leaves that are chewed, and it's been used for thousands of years in South America. Lots of people in South America still do chew the coca leaf. It can, of course, be turned into paste and turned then into cocaine, but that is mainly sent to the West. The people in South Africa like chewing the leaf. Opium traditionally has been used in all sorts of forms, but there was laudanum, which was a sort of a tincture, which would be widely used. Gladstone, for example, was known to have a few drops of laudanum before making a speech in the House of Commons. It's also smoked, particularly associated with the Chinese. But both of those are much safer ways of taking opiates than injecting heroin into your veins, which is something that people never did before prohibition. And the only reason they do it now is the criminalization of opiates has turned the market in the direction of having the very strongest variant of the product. And the most efficient way to use that is to inject it into your veins.
So you've stated that you led the case for the legalization of cannabis. And so would you therefore support the legalization of all drugs?
Well, in a manner of speaking, yes. But that's not to say that you would have heroin sold over the counter, or indeed wraps of cocaine sold over the counter. I would look to getting the market back to where it was before these drugs were prohibited, when they were consumed in a much safer form. And I'm going to make the assumption that because people took these drugs in a much safer way while there was a free market, that that's the way consumers would ideally like to take them. And that, in fact, there isn't an enormous latent demand for intravenous injection of heroin, but perhaps there is a demand for people smoking opium. I would have opium bars, for example. Obviously, the smoking ban would be history if I was in charge. So I would have opium bars. I would hope that people who are currently addicted to heroin now might be tempted to make that switch to consuming the drug in that way, rather than injecting. In the old days in the 19th century, cocaine was taken, but it wasn't really snorted, let alone injected. It was often taken in patent medicines, so it was an ingredient in a product. Perhaps we could go back to that. You have to bear in mind that if you're going to legalize the drugs, and when I say legalize the drugs, I mean legalize the core drug, right? The substance, not necessarily every derivation of it, okay? But if you're basically allowing opiates and coca and THC, which these are the active drugs, to be sold, then somebody has to sell them. And I mean, it's not going to be a complete free-for-all. So which corporation is actually going to want to start selling heroin, for example? We're not in the 19th century. There are a lot more consumer protections around. And you can easily see the potential for a huge number of class action lawsuits if people start dropping dead from taking heroin or crystal meth or other drugs. So I think realistically, a lot of drugs are not going to be sold in an open free market, even if they're technically allowed to be sold, or certainly not on an industrial scale. So, I mean, to answer your question, yes, in principle, I would like to legalize all drugs. I think cannabis is a very obvious place to start. If people feel a bit icky about going beyond that, then that's entirely up to you. There doesn't need to be a slippery slope from cannabis to other drugs. But I certainly would like to see, I think there's low hanging fruit and there's more difficult drugs, basically. You know, you've got some drugs which are highly addictive and other drugs that are not so. Cannabis is, I mean, people might argue with this, but I don't think cannabis is particularly addictive at all. I would say maybe habit forming, but not really addictive in any clinical sense. And then you've got a whole load of other drugs that should never have been banned or medicalized in the first place. You have to remember that the war on drugs started largely as a result of the medical establishment stitch up and power grab. So then the 1868 Pharmacy Act was the product of pharmacists lobbying, really. Up until then, you could buy opium in a pub, you could buy it in a shop, you could buy it anywhere. There's no restrictions on where it was sold. And the pharmacist lobbied the government, saying this is, you know, a dangerous drug. There are people dying of opium overdoses. It needs to be put under some kind of control. And so the pharmacist got hold of it. And then later, the medical establishment managed to get hold of pretty much all the rest of the drugs. So they were wanting to have a stranglehold over it to completely medicalize drug use and make themselves the sole suppliers of, for example, morphine to morphine addicts. So it's been a power grab by the medical establishment, and it's one that, even if you you know, disagree with me about the legalization of some of the harder drugs, it's not obvious to me, for example, why Valium shouldn't be available over the counter. I mean, it still is in some countries. The doctors have got their hands on too many drugs, I think. There are some of the milder drugs, I would say even probably some amphetamines or amphetamine-based products could be sold over the counter. There's not an obvious reason to me why some of these kind of pills and drugs that were over the counter not so very long ago in British history. It's not obvious to me why you should have to go to a GP and explain yourself and you know, ask nicely in order to get an effective sleeping pill, for example, or something like Valium. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be a slippery slope. My personal view is that we should be legalizing more of these drugs. You started off by talking about drug-related deaths. You know, cannabis isn't responsible for any of those. They're primarily heroin deaths and disproportionately take place in Scotland. And I'm not claiming there wouldn't be any opiate deaths with the legalization of drugs. Of course I'm not, but there are a lot more opiate-related deaths than there were before the Pharmacy Act. And you know, things are not getting better under the current system. I also think when it comes to the pretty basic recreational drugs like ecstasy, I don't see any justification for prohibition of that. Those psychedelics, magic mushrooms, LSD, I don't see any real justification for banning them. But, you know, it would be a slow process because we're clearly not going in that direction at the moment, right? We are, as a society, we are going to war on smoking. The government wants to have a smoke-free or a tobacco-free country by 2030. We're going to war on food. We're banning cheese adverts. We're portraying sugar as being something akin to cocaine. And alcohol is also under attack. So clearly we haven't got much momentum behind a liberalization of anything. There is a possibility it would happen with cannabis because other countries have done it and it's produced a lot of tax revenue and it is considered by many people to be a soft drug. But talking beyond that, I think we are talking very hypothetical, very hypothetically, I should say. And it would be, if we went down that road, it would have to be a very long and slow process. I would like to bring the market back to what it was like in roughly, you know, 1880. But of course, people have a very different mentality than people in 1880. I mean, we would have to have a government that over a period of years has explained to people that just because something is legal, it's just because you can actually go to a shop and buy something, that doesn't mean you should. It doesn't mean it's safe. It doesn't mean it's recommended. And so we have some way to go in changing the psychology of the nation, to put it mildly.
Yeah, I mean, that goes on to my next point. I mean, surely, you know, even if you start with cannabis, you legalize that, then, you know, surely more people would take it. And is there not then another harm of that being that, you know, some people argue that's a gateway drug to other things? I mean, what you know, we saw it after prohibition was lifted, you know, alcohol consumption increased. You know, if it's freely available, the stigma of it being illegal would go. More people would take it. Is that a problem for you? Because obviously on the moral basis that you set out, that, you know, people should be able to choose what they consume, surely more people taking a drug wouldn't be a problem to you.
No, it wouldn't. No, it would just show that prohibition was even more wrong. If all these people want to take it and we're stopping them, then it's even less justifiable. It's not absolutely certain that more people would take cannabis, for example, if it were freely available. It's pretty easy to get your hands on it at the moment. The experience in North America, where they've legalized it, hasn't by any means unambiguously shown more people take it. Seems to be, generally speaking, although there isn't a uniform pattern, seems to be, generally speaking, that actually people my age, people in their 40s and 50s and beyond, some more of those people have a dabble at first, although most of them don't seem to continue long term, whereas younger people, prevalence is totally unaffected or even goes down. So it's not a certainty, particularly when you've got drugs that are already pretty easy to get your hands on, although of course the legal deterrent acts as a deterrent to some extent, and you would also expect to see prices go down, and that, all things being equal, would lead to increased consumption anyway. But no, I mean, I don't have a problem with that. I want people to be able to do what they want to do with their own bodies. And as for the gateway effects, you know, it's one of the most spurious reasons to justify prohibition. Essentially, when people say that we must ban this because it's a gateway to something else, they're admitting that there isn't really a justification for banning it in and of itself. They're just bringing in some other drug they don't like. Is cannabis a gateway to harder drugs? I mean, no, not really, and certainly not directly. Insofar as cannabis is put into that basket of illegal drugs, then possibly there might be an in for a penny, in for a pound element to this, in which people are warned off taking drugs throughout their childhood, and they take some, they smoke some cannabis, and they find it's not actually, you know, that bad. They may be inclined to think the same about some other drugs. It's also true that people who have a risk-taking personality are more likely to do various different, you know, engage in various different risk-taking activities. You see this a lot with the debate about vaping. Vaping is something else that there's no justification for banning it in and of itself. And so they have to say it's a gateway to smoking. Well, it isn't. And wherever you've seen vaping increase, you've seen smoking decline, which would strongly suggest that there's no gateway element there. What is true, however, is people who have a taste for nicotine, which is roughly 50% of the population. You know, we know this from the 20th century, when people didn't realize that smoking was particularly bad for them. Around about 50% of the population smoked cigarettes. The other 50% didn't like it, didn't get anything out of nicotine. So people who get a kick out of nicotine are more likely to vape, and they're more likely to smoke. And in the occasional instance, they may find that they vape before they smoke. In actual fact, most people who vape don't see any point in spending much more money on a more harmful way of consuming nicotine, but that's by the by. Gateway, you know, the gateway effect, the gateway hypothesis, it's a pretty feeble excuse for banning things that shouldn't be banned.
Going on, I mean, a pro-legalization argument, I think you sort of mentioned it, is, you know, cannabis is supposedly healthier for people, or has lower risk than other drugs, and certainly alcohol and tobacco. But, you know, I think we can agree that cannabis also has its negative health effects, you know, most notably mental health problems, considered with usage. So from like a public policy perspective, you know, if we know this drug has these health defects, why would we legalize it? Surely it wouldn't make sense. I mean, we can understand from a public health perspective, you know, alcohol and tobacco, we've learned that these drugs over time are terrible, have bad effects. So, but we can also say that about cannabis. So why would we then introduce that and legislate on that?
Well, firstly, we're not introducing it. It's a very widely used recreational drug. The question is, in what form do we want it to be consumed? It's a very good example, actually, cannabis, of what I was mentioning earlier about how drugs tend to become more dangerous and stronger when they're left in the hands of the black market. So cannabis, until the 1990s in Britain, was very widely considered to be a soft drug. And there was a bit of a movement, actually, even then to legalize it on that basis. And then you saw the market change, and it moved very quickly into the skunk direction. Skunk became the dominant type of cannabis. By the end of the 90s, it was very difficult actually to get anything other than skunk. And skunk was fundamentally different to cannabis resin or the grass that was around prior to that, insofar as it had been engineered, you know, it was crossbreeding many times to make it stronger. And for the same reasons as moonshine dominated and crack cocaine dominated and so on, it you can pack more into any given quantity. So you make it stronger, and you can sell a gram of it for twice as much as you could before. But in the process of making it stronger, they made it more dangerous in terms of mental health. So two things happened. Firstly, the THC content went up. The THC, you know, THC is the psychoactive part of cannabis. It's the bit that gets you high. But it also reduces CBD, and CBD acts, think of it as a counterweight, really, to the THC. THC has some negative elements as well as making you high, of course, and one of those is sort of paranoia that many users experience and reports, most of which is temporary, but for some people can be more long lasting. And CBD tends to act as a counterweight to that. And in fact, CBD has been used in mental health to treat some people with mental health conditions. So through this crossbreeding, the suppliers inadvertently created a drug that had low CBD, as well as deliberately creating a drug that had high THC. But both of those things are bad for mental health. Now, if you had a regulated market, you could control both of those in the same way that we sort of control for tar and nicotine yields in cigarettes, and have maximum THC content, and I think more importantly, minimum CBD content. So again, it comes back to this issue of harm reduction. And people who support the prohibition of cannabis often bring up skunk and say, this is totally different to the stuff people were smoking in the 60s. It's more dangerous, blah, blah, blah. And they're quite right, it is. But that's not a reason to keep it banned. That's actually a reason to legalize and regulate it.
I mean, that leads perfectly on to my next question. So as you fully know, we regulate tobacco and alcohol excessively in this country in the name of public health. Is it not the case that, you know, if we did legalize cannabis, cannabis would be brought into the overregulated arms of the state, like booze and cigarettes, and, you know, have its quantities limited and prices imposed on it? Would that not mean that the black market, which you were saying, you know, it is providing these drugs which are high in THC and not good for you, would they not still survive? You know, would the standardization of cannabis fail to occur if it was legalized and highly taxed and highly regulated?
Well, that's been the problem in Canada and quite a few states in America, where they've overtaxed it in particular. It's not so much a regulation of THC, and I wouldn't overregulate THC. You know, I would just stop crazy amounts of THC being in it. But in kind of recent history, we know that most cannabis users are quite happy consuming cannabis that has, for example, less than 15% THC. I think the question about alcohol and drugs, yeah, you're right, we do overregulate them, but it's still better to buy alcohol and tobacco in this country, despite all the nanny state regulation around them, than it would be to buy them in a country in which they were totally banned. I mean, they, with the possible exception of cigarettes, they would be more expensive in the black market. And with cannabis, it would be cheaper in the black market. I write about this in the joint venture report, trying to estimate, you know, what the current demand is for cannabis, what the future demand would be if it was legalized, what kind of tax rates politicians would think about putting on them, and what the final price would be. Cannabis is actually really expensive in this country compared to the United States and Canada, even prior to, you know, the legalization over there. It's about £10 a gram. Cannabis can very, very easily be produced for so much less than £10 a gram. If we're already actually one of the world leaders in producing cannabis in this country, funnily enough, because we produce so much medical marijuana. But yeah, we, on an industrial scale, cannabis can be produced really very cheaply. And you can still whack a fair old tax on that, and it would be significantly cheaper than, well, what people are paying at the moment. And therefore, you would have to be a pretty hardcore fan of black market marijuana to want to continue buying it at £10 a gram, when you could buy it for maybe half that in a regulated shop.
So, I mean, we clearly discussed the war on drugs has clearly failed. You mentioned that the stats I read out at the beginning, you know, weren't cannabis related, they were other drugs. But I'd be interested to know what policy framework you think should exist to replace the current one we have. You know, is there a particular model you like, you know, the Portuguese decriminalization of all drugs sort of thing, or like an Amsterdam, you know, coffee shop culture? You know, are there other options that the UK could look to emulate?
I think you'd have to look to the past rather than look at other countries. I mean, the decriminalisation of drugs, it's a good thing in some respects, but the reality is not very many drug consumers go to prison for consuming drugs. Quite a few of them also deal on the side, and that's what gets them in trouble. And people who deal on a large scale do get arrested and go to prison for a long time. But you don't deal with the criminal network aspect of the whole market by decriminalizing. You just make it so that drug users can walk around without being you know, being arrested. But as I say, it doesn't happen all that much anyway. So you're not getting to the bottom of the problem, and you're not able to regulate these products and indeed tax them in the way that I would like to do. And I think the primary goal for a liberal drug policy has got to be to get the drugs out of the hands of criminals, get them into the legal market so you can regulate them and, yes, tax them. And there's nothing wrong with tax and regulation. The reason I complain about it so much with things like tobacco and alcohol is, as you say, it's excessive and paternalistic. I don't think we need excessive and paternalistic regulation of cannabis, but I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be taxed. I don't see why the people who are involved in making and selling it shouldn't be paying income tax and all the rest of this stuff. Get it into the legitimate market. So my framework would be something more akin to, you know, pre-First World War Britain rather than Portugal or Amsterdam or any of these other countries. Decriminalization is a handy little step forward, but it doesn't get to the heart of the problem at all. So we need to think much more radically about this. We should certainly be looking to legalize cannabis. I hope Britain is going to, you know, be a bit bolder about this, because it will happen sooner or later. European countries are starting to legalize it. Luxembourg is legalizing it at the moment. Uruguay's legalized it. Half of America's legalized it. Canada's legalized it. The dominoes are falling. We need to get on onto this train. I fear that the British government is a bit too scared of, yeah, touching this issue for the sake of bringing in £1 billion tax revenue. But I think it will happen. And the question then is, do we want to go down what, you know, the prohibitions would see as a slippery slope? But I think that's a different conversation. I'm quite happy to accept that there's a massive difference between cannabis and cocaine and heroin. No problem. You know, it doesn't, you know, just because we legalize cannabis doesn't mean we necessarily have to legalize these all these other drugs. But as I said before, you know, the cannabis issue, it's going to reduce a certain amount of criminality, and that's quite good. It's going to bring in a bit of tax, and that'd be nice. And people who use cannabis can relax a bit more. But it's not going to do anything about these drug-related deaths. It's not going to do anything about the broader organized crime associated with the sale of illicit drugs. And I think that's another conversation that we can have. But let's get cannabis legalized first.
Well, that's great, Chris. Thank you. That's all we've got time for. But thank you to Christopher Snowden, Head of Lifestyle Economics at the Institute of Economic Affairs.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to the IA podcast on Podbean, Spotify or Apple. We also upload our podcast on our YouTube channel, IA London. If you want to help contribute to the IA's digital output, please support us on Patreon, where you can benefit from exclusive membership perks whilst helping us continue to produce stimulating educational output. To become an online patron, click the link in the show notes.